Greetings, troubled listeners. Welcome back to the Troubled Men Podcast. I am Renee Komen, sitting in the safe house on the line with my co-host, the original troubled man for troubled times and future mayor of New Orleans, Mr. Manny Chevrolet. Welcome, Manny.
Hey, man. How are you?
I'm hanging in there, Manny. Making progress day by day.
You're part of the recovery.
Well, yeah. I'm in recovery.
Right.
I need to be in recovery.
Are they working on your house yet?
I actually finally got the insurance adjuster out on the roof yesterday. He saw all the roof damage. He's taking over the adjustment on the entire thing. So I feel like I'm in good hands with him. Hopefully I don't get a lot of flack, but, he seemed to agree with my estimation of that the roof needs to be replaced. I've got a construction crew at work over on Bienville Street rebuilding that shed.
You got an adjuster. So what, about 3 weeks after the storm, he finally showed up or she finally showed up?
Well, it's more than 3 weeks. It's been like 5 weeks since the storm. But, we had the first adjuster who came and walked around and looked at everything under the roof. And then they said, well, I don't have a tall ladder, so I don't know. But they knew there was roof damage, so.
Right, yeah. Well, we had our adjuster because we had some very little damage to it. A lot of shingles flew off, and he finally showed up last Sunday, and then some guy went up on the roof and, you know. But then he says, well, give me a week and I'll get back to you. Well, it's been, 10 days now and he hasn't gotten back to us. But I mean, I'm not really that concerned because we had very little damage. So, I mean, I'd rather have those guys helping out the people who really need it,
Sure. Yeah. They got their hands full, man.
But, and they're good hands full. The Allstate guys, they're good hands full if you have Allstate.
Right.
But, it is what it is, man. Hurricanes do what they do, man.
Yep. Didn't I wasn't anticipating that. That's going to be
You're lucky. There's no rain in the forecast for at least a week, so you don't have to be emptying buckets or whatever you've been doing.
No, and the construction crew is able to have some put a bunch of good days together rebuilding that outbuilding over on Bienville. And I think they even said, you can call a plumber and tell him, he can show up on Thursday and start rerunning the water and gas line. So man, if that can actually happen on time, that apartment could be habitable again by the end of the week. My old tenant can move back in because he didn't want to move on. He likes that place so much he was willing to wait until I had it repaired so he could move back.
And where is he now?
He was back. I think he's from like Tennessee or Kentucky or something. He was back in his home area for a while, although I think he might have drifted back down to this area, maybe just staying with friends. And but he did make contact to see what kind of progress we were making earlier. So he's a flexible guy, he's a good-natured fellow. So you have all the students back on campus now. You're still in the crush of the textbook freak out, or how's that going?
It's been all right. It's been pretty busy, but it is what it is. But I want to talk about a good friend of ours.
Oh, okay.
And a big fan of the show.
Uh-huh.
And a good friend of ours was busted for DUI. Mm. Our friend Judge Arthur Murillo.
Oh, really?
You didn't hear this?
No, I didn't.
Oh, well, it's been in the papers. It's been on the news for the last couple of days. Our friend Judge Murillo, an old ring room guy.
Sure.
He was driving, I guess, in his neighborhood, and he ran into a pole in his car, and the police came and they found that he was under the influence of alcohol and driving. Hmm. So our good friend Judge Murillo, they had no comment, but I just want to give a Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, yeah, he understands how, you know, in the legal game, the less you say, the better off you are.
Right. So I really think we need to get him on the show soon.
Well, you know, I remember, you know, when we were back in the ring room, we would always try to get him on. And I think he demurred because he didn't want to endanger his reputation
right.
by coming on the Trouble Town podcast.
That's over now.
Okay. You think it's clear sailing now?
It's clear sailing now. We can get him on the show.
Okay.
But yeah, so I the judge, you know, and you know, he loved going to the ring room. So I'm thinking right. that maybe, you know, the ring room is semi back open again, for drinks and stuff like that, mm-hmm. Only a couple of days a week. And, he's, you know, he loves going to that bar. He does. He really likes it a lot. And, so I'm just hoping, you know, I don't know if he left the ring room and then this happened. I have no idea. It did happen on a Saturday, so I don't think it was at the ring room because the ring room is not open on Saturdays.
Well, let's just say he's accused of this. He may well be innocent, and it may well all pan out that you know, it was
They're not saying, though, is because I heard from some local neighbors in that area that, you know, when the police came, he started throwing punches and stuff.
Oh, really?
At the police.
Well, and, again, allegedly.
Yeah, allegedly
just,
throwing
just
punches.
Just rumors here, yeah.
You know, because, you know, he does work out at the ring room. He does a lot of workout. He
really?
Does the dumbbells and the weights and stuff like that. So
he's no spring chicken, I know that.
No, he's like, I think he's like 82 years old or something like that. Yeah, and then when they handcuffed him, he was, he was shouting Black Lives Matters and stuff like that.
I hate to see anything happen to a friend of the podcast.
You know, it happens, you know, he's 81, you know, why not, you know, have a few cocktails.
Sure. Right. Yeah. What do you have to lose, man? Yeah,
exactly.
Well, you know, speaking of the legal game, are you finished with that?
Yeah, I'm done. Yeah.
Okay. Cause I saw recently, you know, Sirhan, he's got a catchy name, Sirhan, you know,
weren't there 80s new wave band, Sirhan?
It's close to that, close to that.
Okay.
Yeah. But Sirhan, assassin of Bobby Kennedy, he was just paroled after being in prison for all this time for killing Bobby Kennedy. And I saw that John Hinckley, attempted assassin of Ronald Reagan, you know, famously had a big crush on Jodie Foster, that he has just been released without any supervision. So it's been a good few weeks for assassins.
I guess so. I mean, you know, these guys have been in there a long time, and Sirhan. So what are they going to do? I mean, where is Sirhan going to do? You know, did he make enough license plates to go rent an apartment now?
I don't know what his plans are. Really,
I mean, and the other guy, Hinckley. I mean, I think Hinckley came from money.
Okay.
So he probably has something to fall back on, but Sirhan, I'm sure he'll just open like a liquor store in some bad neighborhood or something like
Could
that.
Could be. He's got to be up there in age too, man. I hope he doesn't, start looking out on the horizon of who he might want to assassinate next. I can't imagine that's the case.
And the thing about him, I mean, we know so much about, what's his name? The one who killed JFK.
Lee Harvey Oswald.
Yeah, we know so much about Lee Harvey. I mean, I really don't know much about Sirhan. I mean, you know.
Yeah, he was kind of a mysterious figure.
Yeah, and let's just, you know, and I don't like mystery. You know, I don't really care for mystery.
You don't, really.
You know, but he's, wasn't he like pretending to be like a worker at the place? What hotel was it at? The Ambassador Hotel in Los Angeles.
Okay.
Where Bobby Kennedy was giving a speech, and then he was walking, they were getting him out through the kitchen. And I think he was pretending to be a busboy or.
Right. I think you're right.
Like, yeah. And he came over and just shot him, you know?
Yep.
You know, one of the funniest but worst things I ever saw was on the Today Show. Remember Matt Lauer used to host the Today Show?
Right.
Well, he had. He had Bobby Kennedy's son on the show. He was interviewing him on the morning show. And, you know, this is when Ted was still alive.
Okay.
And Matt Lauer made the biggest faux pas or mistake ever as an interview. He goes, and now I'd like to, you know, he goes, welcome, good morning to you. And he said, instead of saying, how's your uncle? He said, how's your dad?
Oh, yeah.
he goes, how's your dad? I mean, your uncle.
Like, yeah, it's tough, man. Yeah.
He's no longer the host of the Today Show anymore.
No, he got me too'd. Yeah,
But also, I want to talk about, you know, local politics. You know, we're getting closer to the election. I'm having my fundraiser on the 16th of October
at the
Carrollton Station, and we've got a great lineup.
Yep.
We've got Missy Meatlocker, Natty Sanchez. We got the Guitar Legends of New Orleans featuring Cranston Clemens, John Rankin, and all sorts of other people. We got a band called Flatware, which features D.C. Harbaugh. And do you remember Chris Knotts from the Plowboys?
Yes.
He's in town, so he's going to be playing. And we've got all sorts of stuff, and we'll be there. You'll be there for a while.
Yeah, that sounds fun. You said Sex Dog is playing as well.
Well, right? that's the much, much more bit on the flyer. Much more is probably okay. Sex Dog will play something. And who, remember we had a guest a while back? Her name was Tiana or Trina or something like that.
Tiana Hux, yes. Yeah. From Malavitas.
That's the name of her band. She might play. Her band might play too. We haven't
gotten that band.
I've never seen them, but my wife and her take a class together at the Ring Room.
Yes, the Malavitas, it's almost everybody in the band has been on the podcast. So Carlo Anuso is the drummer, Tiana Hux is the singer, and Rob Cambray is the guitar player.
Hmm.
And they've all been on the podcast. So yes,
they have a gig out of town the night before our fundraiser, so it's not 100% sure they're going to make it. But listen, before we get to our guest, because she's waiting patiently for us, she's exciting to me.
Oh yeah,
I want to talk about going on, all the stuff here in the city. The trash isn't getting picked up; it's getting worse and worse. I don't know if your trash is getting picked up, but they picked up our trash last Monday, and they haven't been back since. And so
it's piling up again.
It's piling up again in lots of neighborhoods, but. Apparently, a guy in Gentilly, I don't know if you heard about this, is so angry. He was so angry that his trash hasn't been picked up since the storm that he called 911. Did you hear about this?
Oh, yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah. And he says he will shoot the mayor if his trash isn't picked up.
Right.
He will shoot the mayor, which means he wants to kill the mayor.
Right.
If his trash doesn't get picked up, he was arrested. And he might get up to 15 years in jail if convicted.
Right. Well, the thing that caught my eye, I read that whole article, and they had his attorney speaking for him, and he said in his client's defense, he said, clearly my client has a drinking problem.
Oh, I didn't see that. Well, that's a good defense.
Yeah. Yeah, he didn't really mean it. It was just the booze talking, you know?
Right, just the booze talking, makes you a big tough guy,
Right,
It's also like that guy who confronted LaToya, our mayor, at the bar. He was at the bar. He was probably a little souse, and he confronted her, and she had her bodyguards, so she was giving him a lot of verbiage, What I was thinking is didn't people used to just burn trash years and years ago, just burn their garbage?
Well, out in the country, I don't think you can really do that in the city. I mean, you shouldn't do it anywhere, but people do that in the country, but
Because I remember seeing those old stuff from the 20s, in New York, people would just be burning their garbage.
Yeah, I think during the Depression, they would burn it. They'd start a fire just to stay warm, right?
And have the
hobos out there warming their hands over a burning trash fire.
Wow. Well, anyway, so I hope he gets off this guy.
It'll probably put him on some kind of probation or what do they call it? Diversion program.
He'll have to get his card signed at an AA meeting.
Right. Exactly. Some court ordered recovery.
Right. All right. Well, listen, I'm done. I have a few other things, but they can wait for another time.
Yeah.
But let's get to our guests.
Yes. Yes. She's a terrific guest. I've known her for a while. Her career has kind of paralleled the same timeline as the Iguana's career. She's originally from Canada, but she's been in Austin for a good long time. She's a multi-award winning blues roots guitar player, vocalist, songwriter. She has a terrific new record that's coming out October 22nd, Pinky's Blues, and it's already out in Canada, and she's got three singles in on the Roots Music Report. She has number one, number two, and number 11 slots in the top 50. Canada song chart. So it's going to be a great record, big record for her. So anyway, we'll get into all that. But without further ado, Miss Sue Foley. Welcome, Sue.
Hi there.
Hello.
Hi, guys.
How are you? Welcome.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you for being here.
Man, it's my pleasure.
It's exciting. You're having a good week, aren't you? Because you got your number one with a bullet.
Number one.
Yeah.
Yes, and you're getting all kind of attention from magazines. I saw a Vintage Guitar magazine debuted one of your singles.
Yeah, we're doing all right. I mean, considering the album's still a while to come out, so right. I feel pretty stoked about it. Yeah, it's all right.
Yeah, and you got a real professional team behind it. You know, I watched all of your videos today, like very professional looking videos.
And, Thank you. Yeah,
that was sound terrific.
They were done by this guy in Nashville, Tim Hardiman, who does a lot of work with the Black Keys, but he's a very cool dude. So yeah,
nice.
Yeah.
So Sue, let's work our way from the beginning. So you're born in Ottawa.
Yeah.
Is that where you grew up?
Well, yeah, a little bit. I mean, I was in Ottawa till I was about 13, and then we moved to Edmonton. Then I moved back to Ottawa, then I moved to Vancouver. And from then, I've just been sort of a transient gypsy type. But
okay.
I've been in Texas since, you know, I was in Texas by the time I was 21. And then I went back home to raise a kid. And I've been back in Texas for about the last 3.5 years or so.
Okay.
Yeah.
So spent almost as much time in Texas as you have in Canada, huh?
Yeah. And it's great. I'm happy to be back.
So you said you went back to Canada to raise a child?
Yeah.
When was this?
That was at the end of the 90s.
Okay. Did you go back there because the healthcare system's better?
Well, yeah. I mean, I'm from Canada, and also my family was there. So
right.
It was kind of, but yeah, the healthcare thing, I didn't know anything about the U.S. healthcare system at that point. We've been touring down here for years, never had any healthcare, but we were kids, you know, we didn't know anything about anything.
I knew a girl from Vancouver. She was a real Canadian girl, and she used to open beer bottles with her teeth.
Ooh.
Can you do that?
No, but
okay.
That sounds like a real Canadian girl.
Yeah.
It does.
Yeah, she was something, man. She used to open. It'd be like, you know, you'd be really drunk at a party, couldn't get the beer open, and you just give it to her, and she was our, you know, she was our bottle opener with her teeth.
Oh man,
yeah,
oh, that's pretty
be careful.
Yeah.
Well, it must have good dental care up there in Canada.
Yeah, that too. Yeah.
Well, so Sue, you're a 13-year-old girl in Canada. As was I at one time. No, just kidding. But how do you get into playing the blues as a 13-year-old girl in Canada?
Yeah, it's kind of funny. I even wonder that myself sometimes. Like, how did I ever get here? But you know, I had three older brothers, and my dad. They all played guitar. So the family instrument was guitar. I was the youngest of five kids, and I picked it up too when I was 13. I always wanted to be a musician, but I didn't know. I would play guitar until I was 13. And then I was just like, okay, this is going to be my vehicle. But it wasn't until I was about 15 and I discovered early blues music that I realized, and I went to my first blues show, that I realized it would be a, I would be a blues guitar player. You know, it was through bands, like, cause my brothers were all into Zeppelin and ZZ and the Stones and Clapton. And I didn't realize for a long time that, oh, well, I've been hearing blues my whole life. It just was played by white kids, white British kids or whatever. But yeah, that's how I discovered it, mainly through the Stones. And then once I discovered it, it was like, okay, where have you been all my life? It wasn't really even just the records. It was when I went to my first blues show and we were kids.
Who was that? Who was your first blues show?
It was James Cotton.
Nice.
Yeah. And you know, at the time I was in Ottawa, you know, I was just like any other teenager, just really unhappy.
Sure. Pissed off. Right.
Displaced, pissed off, whatever you want. You know, I didn't like the world very much. You know, I was just like, what the, you know, but
you can curse on the podcast.
Oh, okay. What the fuck are we up for? You know, like, right. And I'd been into punk rock prior to that, cause I was a pretty angry teen for a while. And then I went to this James Cotton show, and, man, I just, this music, I don't know. It just got inside me. And I guess I was in that position where you're just open and it just gets right into you, you know? And I was so enamored that, and then so uplifted, you know, people say, oh, blues, you know, so depressing or so sad. And then I was so uplifted. I didn't feel sad. I felt like there was some meaning in the world. So that was it. You know, I was changed. Okay.
And how old were you?
I was 15.
15 when you saw, oh, that's great. That's amazing.
Yeah.
And then I saw you started playing gigs a short time after that, like 16 or something. You started the Sue Foley band. Is that correct?
Well, I started playing gigs at 16, and then I played around Ottawa in different groups and I learned a lot. And then I decided at 18, I was going to move to Vancouver. So I packed up my little bit of stuff and I moved to Vancouver by myself at 18. I just graduated from high school. I got to Vancouver and I figured, well, I'll get there and I'll get a gig, you know, as a guitar player, but nobody wanted to hire me. So I met another bunch of young players like myself at the local blues jam. And I just had to form my own band because I couldn't get a gig. So I didn't really want to, I didn't want to sing. I didn't want to front a band. I just wanted to play guitar, but nobody would hire me or there were no gigs open. And so I started my own band and that was it.
So Vancouver is, you went there because there's a better music scene?
Well, you know, I was from Ottawa and, you know, in Canada, there was two choices at the time. It was Toronto or Vancouver. Toronto's pretty close to Ottawa. I think I just wanted to go far. I just wanted to
get away. Yeah.
Yeah. I just wanted to go on an adventure and Vancouver was far away.
Cool.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, cool. So you're up there playing. How does Austin come into the picture?
Well, you know, at that time, even before I left Ottawa, you know, by the time I was 16, we already knew about the Austin scene in the blues. You know, I'd started taking a few blues guitar lessons in Ottawa, and because I couldn't figure out how to play blues. And we were going to the blues jam, but then, you know, the Vaughn brothers broke out, you know, and we started hearing about Austin. Stevie Ray got really big. And then I saw the Fabulous Thunderbirds in Ottawa. And I think I was also forever changed from seeing Jimmy Vaughn at that age. And I knew about Austin and I just wanted to go there so bad. We knew what was going on there. So I got to Vancouver and we started gigging as the Sioux Foley band around Canada. And then we got hired by Mark Hummel, a Bay Area harmonica player. And he got a stateside. Cause you know, for Canadians, it's not easy to play in the States, right? It's a real hassle. Like they really make it hard. Even to this day, it's quite hard. You got to go jump through a lot of hoops. So we didn't know how to get down to the States. We were kids. We were just like, but I knew I had to go to Austin. So we toured in the US with Mark Hummel and towards the end of, you know, we toured almost steady for an entire year with him. And towards the end of that year, we met Clifford Antone, the owner of Antone's nightclub and record company in Memphis at the W.C. Handy Blues Awards. It's called the Blues Music Awards now, but it's W.C. Handy. And then we met Cliff, and he told me to send him a tape, and he brought me to Austin.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So why is it so difficult for Canadians to cross the border?
It's the visa requirements to work in the U.S., the processing time. Like, for instance, it takes at least 3 months to 4 months to get your, they say 120 days to process the paperwork. So you've got to have all your gigs booked out that far, right?
Oh, okay.
So think about it. If you want to get, you know, a month's worth of work, it's got to be booked out 5 or 6 months. I don't know. Just a lot of people can't figure that out and get it together. And then you got to pay processing fees. So for a Canadian,
and you're just a kid. You just want a lot.
Yeah. For a Canadian coming to the U.S., well, these fees and everything, you're not going to make any money down here right away until you've played here for a while. So it's a catch 22, right? So you have to pay. It's just hard. It's even hard now, but back then we just snuck across when Mark Hummel hired us, and then we did figure out how to get paperwork because he sponsored us. But
okay,
yeah,
man. So when you went out with Mark Hummel, you guys were really hitting the road hard, huh? That must have been an incredible learning experience for you, being out there playing that many dates, you know, in a row with him, huh?
Oh yeah, we did. And you know, prior to that, we played in Canada at these gigs, and these gigs don't exist anymore, but they were very popular back then. It was, you'd play a week in every venue. You would have a 6 week tour. It'd be 6 gigs. You know, you'd get to a gig on the Sunday, you'd start on Monday, you'd play through Saturday, and you play 3 hour sets a night, plus encore if necessary, and a Saturday afternoon matinee. So I did that for a while before we even met Mark Hummel, and we were getting our road legs. And then,
right.
And then when Mark Hummel brought us stateside, man, we were playing all the time, all over the place. And that's what it takes, right? As you know, to get.
Sure, sure. Well, yeah, there's a whole, blues trail. And I've played that where I've played it all the way up, like from New Orleans all through Kansas City, all the way straight up into Canada. And you know, from east to west, and then, you know, down the west coast of the U.S. Yeah, there's a ton of clubs out there, that's for sure.
Well, and there was a lot more back then. And there's, I don't know what's going on now, but back then there was a lot of clubs. There was clubs everywhere. So we were working, and it was great.
Nice, yeah. Nice. So you meet Clifford Antone, and he says, come down to Austin. I want to sponsor you, sort of.
Well, he called me up. We had gotten off the road. He told me, send me something. That's what he said. And we got off the road with Mark, and we were burnt out. I mean, we were tired. I don't think we'd been home in a year. And sleeping everywhere, you know, just playing everywhere and not stopping, no homes. So I got off the road. I was really tired. And I did get into the studio and record a little demo cassette, and I sent it to Clifford. And I was going out to the island, you know, off the coast of Vancouver, and my boyfriend's parents had a place out there, and we went out there and just were hanging out. And it was like, there was nothing to do, so we were going to bed pretty early, and Clifford called, and it was the middle of the night, and, you know, that was it. He called, he heard my tape, and he said, hey, I heard your tape, you know, you want to come down to Austin?
You know, nice. Usually when someone says to me, send me something, it's usually something illegal. So, but I'm glad you didn't do that.
No. No, it was all in the up and up. And sort of a, for me at the time, it was like a Cinderella story, because I really, really, really wanted to go to Austin. It was the only place I wanted to go. I wanted to go so bad I could taste it. You know, and I didn't know how to get there. I was like, how do we get there? We're Canadians. Nobody knows us. Nobody gives a shit. Nobody gave a shit about us in Canada. Like, we were like, well, I don't know. Nobody cared about us up there. It wasn't until I came back to Canada after I'd recorded for Antones that people were like, oh, she's Canadian. She's great. You know how that goes, you know?
Sure. Well, at this point, you've won like 17 Maple Blues Awards. I think you're the record holder for the most Canadian Blues Awards won by any one person. So, yes, you're quite celebrated. In fact, I saw you've been nominated a bunch of times, but you also won the Juno Award, which is like a Canadian Grammy in 2001, huh?
Yep.
Incredible. That's fantastic.
Well, thanks.
Sue.
Thank
man,
you.
Oh man. Well, so you make it down to Austin, and you're in heaven. You're, you know, the Vaughn brothers are there. Describe the scene when you get down to Austin. You're a kid in the candy store. What do you find?
Like the first weekend I was in Austin. First weekend, we were just hanging at Antone's club in Clifford. I moved into his place. He had an extra wing in his condo, and he's like, yeah, you can just stay here as long as you need. It's a really nice, new, really nice place. I was like, great, you know. And
right.
He'd take us to the club or take me to the club every night. And the first weekend, it was Albert Collins and Katie Webster, where nice. It was like a double bill. I mean, the place was packed, and Collins was hot. I mean, it was, you know, it's just those times, like Albert Collins, man. I mean, there was nothing better than that, and so right. he put me up there with Albert at the end of the night, and I shot dice with Albert Collins that night.
He took
my money. I mean, it was like everything. You know, I was just like, it was great. It was like, wow, this is incredible. And from there, it just kept getting better. I mean, there was so many good players, and they took me under their wing. They made me part of their family. I was kind of in the middle of it. I was in the middle of it, you know.
Now, your fellow Canadian bandmates, did they stay?
They followed me about 6 months later.
Okay.
They followed me down. And then it was great. Then I had my band from Canada. We were all Canadians. They loved us. We're all young. We're 21.
Right.
And so we found other people our age to hang out with, and we just had fun, man. We were at the club every night. We played. We got to play with everybody.
Yeah, to me, Austin's the only cool thing about Texas. The rest of the state can, you know, to me is a pigsty. But I love Austin.
You better be careful where you say that.
Yeah. Sue is all Texas team now. It's not just Austin, right?
Oh yeah. No, I'm fully. I drank the Kool-Aid. I love Texas.
Oh really?
Look around. Oh my God.
I've been to Dallas, and that place is awful. And Houston is.
I love Dallas.
There you go.
Oh, okay. Well, let's stop right here.
Here's the deal. You got to know where to go. You got to know the inside scoop. But West Texas is unbelievably beautiful.
Well, yeah, you were coming from Austin, and you were already an insider there. So, you know, you had an inside track to the cool part of Texas, you know, that whole blues continuum that runs through, you know, all the towns. They have a scene and, you know, all over the place there.
Yeah. And, you know, at the time, you know, Austin really was it. This is where we hung.
Right.
We played around Texas, you know, Houston, San Antonio, not that much in Dallas, but I've grown to like Dallas actually this time being back. I enjoy the whole vibe of it. Everything really.
Yep.
Yeah.
And like you were talking about Albert Collins, like at that time, a lot of that a lot of people in that generation were still active and you know, at the not young men, but at the top of their game, and you everybody came through Antones. I'm
absolutely
sure.
Absolutely, we saw everybody, and you know, we were the young kid band, and they put us out on the road. We were opening for Buddy Guy. We were the openers. Like, we got every opening gig for some reason. We were open for all the Alligator acts, Coco Taylor. We toured with Buddy Guy. I mean, that means watching Buddy Guy every night. Night after night, and following his band. I mean, we were out with Johnny Winter. We were out with Lonnie Brooke.
I love Johnny Winter.
I know. Yeah. We were out with all those guys, you know, and women like Coco Taylor too. I mean, so all these people are dead. You know, you just, you forget that, oh shit, Well, I don't forget, because it's like, wow. Yeah, it was a big deal. It was a big fucking deal. Like, if I can say that, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Those guys were so heavy. There was so much, like, if I have a criticism of the blues scene today, it's not really a criticism. It's just that everybody died. You know, and there's
that first generation is gone. Yeah, yeah.
And you know, you can't really get that back. There's some tremendous acts right now, but that whole thing, there was a real reckoning as far as who was good. I mean, Little Milton, Bobby Bland. I mean, everybody. It was like Ray Charles. I mean, everybody was still alive, so we would see all these people, and John Lee or whatever, and you'd be like, you really felt like an ant next to those guys, like, and women, you know, Etta James or all the people. I'm sure you understand, because you've been
sure
for a long time. But
Well, besides you, who's out there doing it
right now?
Yeah,
I mean, there's a lot of people out there. It's not Albert Collins and Coco Taylor. Let's maybe put it that way.
Right. So it's a newer generation, but yeah, the blues, people always love the blues, you know. It's it may not be on the radio, but man, it's a thriving scene, you know. It's
yeah, it keeps going.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, at that time you were talking about the Fabulous Thunderbirds, Keith Ferguson, you know.
Yeah.
I'm sure you, it's some real characters too, you know.
Yeah, we hung out with him a lot.
Yeah, and are you friends with the Sexton brothers?
Yep, I'm more friendly now with Charlie. Will Sexton lives in Memphis. You know Will better than you. Yeah,
Yeah. Will is a good friend. He was on the podcast. I played on his last record. Love Will. Love Charlie. Played in Austin not too long ago for their birthday party that Continental. They've had it for, I don't know, 40 years or something. And
I know, and I heard you guys were here the day after, and I was like, what? We were like, we still would have been there.
Shoot, yeah, I wish you would have. There was room, you know. It was I thought, oh, for sure, Steve Wertheimer, who was the picture of prudence. I thought, oh, he's going to cancel this. He goes, no, come on down, guys. You know, we've been doing this Sexton Brothers birthday thing for so long. We didn't get to do it last year. I really want to do it, and I really want y'all to be here. I'm like, fuck yeah, Steve. You know, we will.
He's the best. Steve.
Yes.
Is,
yes.
He's
love
our
Steve.
Guy here. Yeah.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah.
Well, you know, so you're talking about, you know, being young, and, you know, I was like being a woman in the music business, or being a woman in the blues world. I mean, you feel like you've had to fight a lot against preconceptions, or you have feelings about that subject?
Well, it's kind of a loaded question. I think we all have our own fight to fight. So I've never tried to fall back on the whole female thing, because I always felt like people have asked me that question, and I was like, well, you know, we all have our challenges. Guys have challenges too.
Sure.
And we all have our own set of challenges based around who we are. But, you know, I was probably more discriminated against because I was white than female, you know, in a blues scene, because, you know, blues is, and Canadian even to boot. I mean, Canadian, Jesus Christ. Sorry.
Sure.
Now that you said I could swear.
Like, sure, absolutely.
But you know what I mean? Like, being Canadian probably was a more of a thing around my neck than anything. Because it's like, who? They're like, Canadian? What? Who cares about Canada and the blues, you know? So.
Right, right. No, okay. All right. That I like that answer. That's great.
Well, yeah. I mean, the female thing, and I don't know what it's like to be a dude, but I've traveled with a lot of dudes, and I didn't think this path is easier for anybody.
No. Music business is not a place to go if you want an easy time.
especially now.
No, we only do this because we have to.
Yeah, at this point we have to, and
right,
you know, or well, we could do something else, but we still.
No, when I say we have to, I don't mean that we don't have alternatives. I mean that we're compelled to. Our internal drive compels us to do this. That's why we did it in the first place. You know?
Yeah, it's like some crazy thing that just keeps you going.
It's a calling. It's like the priesthood, yes. But
it know, is like, exactly. Yes, and yes. I've said that and thought that myself. Yeah, it's like being a priest, you know.
Yes.
You take a vow of poverty.
Right. Yeah. 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 Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Not celibacy, though.
Right. Not no vow of chastity. But,
no vow.
I don't think the priests are very celibate.
Well, there you go.
That's a whole other subject. You're right, Manny.
Yeah.
You're probably right about that.
Well, Manny, I'm looking at my cocktail, and I'm thinking this might be a good time to re-up. What do you think?
Yeah, I think so, too. And Sue, I don't know if you're drinking with us tonight, but we always take a little break right now. It's like a halftime kind of thing.
Yeah.
And we go refill our libations, and we'd like to tell the Troubled Nation to do the same thing. And we'll be right back.
When the days grow short and the night takes hold, I bear and the moon is cold. Lonely steps barely make a sound. You can't dig in a frozen well. Come to me, my darling. Come to me, my love. Come to me, my darling. Shadows fall. The fog moves in an eerie sprawl. Surrounding you, it's so hard to move. You lost the feeling, you lost the groove. Come to me, my darling. Come to me, my love. Come to me, my darling.
Back with Mr. Manny Chevrolet. I am Renee Coman, back with our guest, Miss Sue Foley. Now, Sue, we've had a variety of sponsors over the course of this podcast. Currently, we're back to our original sponsor, which is Loose Change.
Okay.
And,
Loose Change. So it's not a specific entity. It's just the, you know, loose change that you have in your pants pockets, or, you know, we discovered people put loose change in their car ashtrays now. Mm-hmm. Where else, Manny?
Well, you can find it in your couch cushions, or, you know, a lot of people keep coins like in a jar.
Yeah.
Right.
Or, you know, that kind of stuff. I like to keep all my loose change in this huge 70s ashtray that I've had all my life, because I was a smoker in the 70s.
Right.
You know, but loose change is everywhere. I mean, you can just walk the streets and you can find, you know, a penny here, a nickel there. And for the nation, they know that loose change is what we need.
Right, right. So, and you were saying that you'd even found some loose change in your daughter's room. So, it's everywhere. So, people, you know, when you have that loose change, you know, even in your bank account, you know, we have the PayPal link there. We have a Patreon page. Our patrons supporting us week in and week out. If you're a regular listener, even just an occasional listener to the Troubled Men podcast, you know, get some skin in the game and support the podcast. It helps us to you know, defray our operating costs and bring you these scintillating guests like we have tonight. And you know, for free, you can follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. Subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. Rate us five stars.
And you can still get t-shirts, right? Our t-shirts are still available.
Yes, t-shirts are still available. The links are right there in the show notes of every show. And yes, you can represent, show all your friends how cool you are that not only do you listen to the Troubled Men podcast, you have a Troubled Men podcast t-shirt.
Yeah, in fact, I was walking from campus the other day to my car, and I'm walking as fast as I can to get home and get out of. Anyway, I hear this guy, someone's going, "Manny, Manny," and some guy walking his dog, and he goes, "You don't know me, but I'm listening to your podcast right now."
I love it.
While he was walking his dog.
Nice.
And I said, "That's right. I don't know you. Stay away from me. Get out of here." But nice. No, he ended up, we've got a mutual friend. Okay. So, you know, he's into the podcast. He was listening to the, what was that show we did a few weeks ago? Michael Pays.
Michael Paz, yes.
Michael
yes.
Paz, yeah. Right, he was right. listening to that while he was walking his dog. And,
okay.
He's coming to the fundraiser. His
Excellent.
Name is, I don't know, maybe you know him. His name is Hesh or Hirsch. Hirsch
yes,
something.
I do. Hirsch Katzen. Yes, he's a regular supporter of the podcast. Shout out to Hirsch Katzen.
Okay,
yes,
yeah.
Yes, big,
well,
big supporter. Patron
oh, good. Yeah. I can't believe I remembered his name. Cause, you know,
yeah, I can't either,
yeah,
man.
Yeah, because I'm the worst politician, Sue. I can't remember names.
Oh.
You know, and I shake babies and kiss hands.
There you go.
It's the worst thing to do.
Got that mixed
I'm
up.
Looking at your guys' Instagram right now. I just followed it.
Oh, no. Oh, okay. Really? Okay.
All right. Very
Excellent.
Good. Very good. Very good, Sue.
I've just, during the break, I had a bite of a chocolate bar with cacao. Have you
okay.
ever had the cacao chocolate bars?
I've seen those. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, man. They're like a shot of speed, man.
Yeah, it's a whole jolt. It's pretty pretty
it's
stiff.
A whole jolt,
yeah.
So bear with me.
Right, sure.
So Sue, back to you.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
So you're in Texas in the 80s. You're seeing all these legends, and they start dying one by one, and you kind of take over. You take over the scene, right?
What was the 90s first? It was the 90s.
Okay.
No, I did not take over the scene by any means. But, you know, I just kept going. I mean, that's what we do, but.
Right.
You know, people started sort of dying off towards the end of the decade of the 90s and then into the early 2000s. By now, you know, we've got Buddy Guy.
Is it because of Flocka?
What?
Was it because of Flocka?
What's
the Flocka addiction?
No, I don't think Flocka made it to Texas in the 90s. But I did want to point out that so we're kind of going to move a little bit quicker through this now. But so starting in 92, you record the first record for Antone's Young Girl Blues, makes a big splash. Since then, you've recorded like 15 records or something like that under your own name and
something like that.
And done records with Lazy Lester, made a couple of records with him, and just a huge body of work that you've produced. Mm-hmm. And leading up to your record right before this current one was kind of a breakthrough record for you, The Ice Queen in 2018. Mm-hmm. And on that record, you had Billy Gibbons from ZZ Top and Jimmy Vaughn, who you mentioned was, you know, the Vaughn brothers made a big impression. And now these are your peers, you're in with them. In fact, I saw that you recently, again, I'm jumping around a lot. You recently guested with Jimmy Vaughn on a show opening for Eric Clapton at the Royal Albert Hall. That must have been thrilling, huh?
Wow. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Jimmy's been really supportive and I love Jimmy. Love him to death. And
Great guy.
Yeah. I still go see him play all the time. I always learn something. He's just the great, really elegant guitar player and very styled. You know, he's got so much style. He always had a lot of style, but style, you know, it's something that you really need to take into account as a player, because it's important, you know. And then you see people that really have style and you're like, man.
Yes, well, taste, you know,
style
and taste are kind of the same thing, you know. And there's been the technique versus taste thing, and it's always taste always wins, I think, you know, because that's where it's at, you know. It's the flashing fingers are fine, but you know, it doesn't do you any good unless it tastes good.
There you go. taste is a great word for it too.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Well, so, honing in on this most recent record, Pinky's Blues. So that's a nickname for your guitar, right? Pinky.
Yeah.
And for those who haven't seen photographs, who don't know you well, it's that's a pink Paisley Telecaster guitar. Mm-hmm. that you've been playing forever. I was talking to a associate of mine and asking if they had any questions for you, and he said, "Well, ask about that guitar because I've never seen her play any other guitar but that one." And it's obviously has a big central role in your career. How did you come across that guitar? What's the story behind Pinky?
Well, I when I gravitated to solid body electrics, I started on acoustic and then I went to a hollow body as I got into electric guitar. And then I was going to get a solid body. And I was thinking about Albert Collins and Muddy Waters, and everybody was playing Strats at that time, so I bought a Telecaster. I specifically bought a Tele because I didn't want to sound like everybody else. I was like, I'm going to get a Tele. So I got a blonde Tele originally. And then, I don't know, a year or so later, they reissued those pink Paisleys. And I walked into a music store in Vancouver, and I saw it, and I was like, oh, I have to get that. It's just like one of those things, like, I've got to have that guitar.
Right.
And I ended up getting it, and I paid it off in payments. And that one guitar, you know, I was, 20 years old at the time, or 19 or 20, and that one guitar saw me through to this day. I mean, it's the same guitar you hear on my new album. You've heard on every album I've recorded. I'm just not a collector of guitars, right? I've played this one guitar the whole time, which is pretty wild because most guitar players are collectors and they love to switch around, but I've always stuck with this one guitar.
So let me ask you something real quick, because for someone who's not a musician, I'm not a musician. Now, what is the difference between this Strat and this other guitar? What's the difference?
Well,
sound that comes out?
Yeah, they sound distinctly different. They've got different pickups. The pickup is what, magnifies the sound, I guess, or it's the electronics. So it's got different styles of pickups in it, first of all, that sound different, but they're also shaped different. They have a different setup. They're quite distinctly different. Now, if you weren't a guitar player, you might not be able to hear the difference.
Well, I was asking Bill. We had Bill Kirchen on a couple of months ago, and he's notorious Tele guy, and I was asking him about the Tele, because Tele has kind of a thing to it. There's a whole school of Tele players, you know.
Yeah.
And he said, well, the Tele is the most basic guitar that you could possibly have.
Yes, it's the most basic guitar. It's kind of like the first electric guitar was styled, a Tele styled after that. And it's very basic. It's like a block of wood, basically. I always figure, like, if you can make a Tele sound good, you could probably play pretty well, because there's no bells and whistles. Like, if you just play a Tele through an amp with no effects or anything, you kind of got nowhere to hide. So I just always like the Tele. I like the image of the Tele, but I'm a stone Tele player.
Right. Yeah, I love the sound. You know, Rod Hodges, Iguana's guitar player, has a bunch of guitars, and he brings them on the gig, and they all sound good occasionally, he occasionally brings them on. But nothing sounds like his Tele. You know, it's got a cutting sound, but it's a fat sound. It's not thin. You know, it's got a lot of body to it. It's hard to go wrong.
Man. Yeah, you can't go wrong. I call it the greatest guitar. Of course.
There you go. There you go. And those pink Paisleys are so distinctive and such a beautiful specimen of a Tele. So that's it's a sexy guitar. You know, it's a pink Paisley. That's a good sexy girl's guitar. I like that. Sexy boy's guitar too.
Thank you. Well, that Paisley stuff is just, it's like wallpaper. Like, so I've had this guitar so long that it started to chip. You know, I've had it, bumped it into things and dropped it. I mean, you name it, that guitar has been through it. So that paint just chips off, and it's not paint, but it's like this paper underneath. It So my guitar, like, it's not the one on the album cover, because the album cover, I've actually got a couple of new pinkies that are set up similar to my old one, because the old one, I'm not bringing her on the road anymore. I decided year before last I wasn't going to bring her out because she was too precious. So I ended up getting a couple of new ones.
Okay, nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
But they're both Paisleys too, so.
Yes, yeah. Yes. You got to keep that visual identity going.
Exactly.
Well, so tell us about Pinky's Blues. Now, I was listening today. It's a very Texas-centric record overall, I think.
Yeah, it's a guitar record. I mean, that's why we called it Pinky's Blues, because Pinky is the guitar. It's a guitar record. And, you know, last year we were limited in what we could even do in the recording studio because we couldn't see anybody. So we got a very small group together. It's recorded mostly, it's all live. And it was, you know, there was only three or four, five of us in the studio, three in the band and Mike Flanagan producing and our engineer. And we just all set up in one room, one big room, and away we went. And we just wanted to play, you know, tunes we loved, and we were just like, oh, let's try this, let's try that. And then I was like, oh, I wrote this one, let's try this one. But it was very casual. It was all done in like 2.5 days.
Nice, yeah. Nice. Well, and I saw that early on in the pandemic that you and Mike Flanagan, the great organ player Mike Flanagan, I always point out that Mike is the only organ player that I've ever seen play bass pedals with cowboy boots on.
Yeah.
You know, usually people take their shoe off so they can play bass pedals with a sock, you know, because they can really feel it. But not only does Mike not take his shoe off, he plays with a cowboy boot. I don't see how he does it, but you would never know he's got a boot on. He plays so beautifully. So, but you and Mike Flanagan were doing a quarantine live stream,
like
duo shows, right? The Texas Blues Party. You recorded, you and Mike, well, Mike recorded a record, West Texas Blues, that you played on.
Yeah.
Early on, that kind of had grown out of that Texas Blues Party. Talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, so we started, you know, right, we were just talking about that today, about 6 weeks into this lockdown stuff, and we were looking for something to do, and people were live streaming. We thought, well, let's try it. But we wanted to do something different, so we set up, we made a whole set. It was really fun. It was sort of like a really low-budget 70s TV show or something, you know? It was like, it was kind of cornball, but we had like a set and a backdrop, and we couldn't bring a drummer in because we couldn't see anybody, so we used this drum machine. It's called the Rhythm Ace. It's like one of the 60s. I think it's from the 60s.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's really cool sounding, like one of those early drum machines. So we played along with that, and it was it was like a variety show. So we would have a theme, you know, like, hey, it's Freddie King night, and we talk about Freddie King and play some Freddie King songs, and then call up a friend who had played with Freddie King, you know, or something. And
oh, cool.
And so we did that. It was really fun. And that, you know, we did it four times, and then we kind of moved on to other things. And then we did Mike's album, and my album was right on the heels of that. So we used the same kind of principle, you know. We've been, you know, looking at all these old albums and thinking about stuff we'd learned way back and revisiting stuff. So that's kind of how we came up with the tunes for each of our albums.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you know, you're talking about Stevie Ray Vaughan and in fact Chris Layton, the Double Trouble drummer, plays on both of those records, right?
Yes. And isn't that funny, right? Cuz Chris Layton is our friend, and he's around here, and he's still a magnificent drummer and loves to do things, and we got to hang out with him, and we were actually swimming together with Chris Layton today, believe it or not.
It's just one big happy family over there in Austin.
We were down at Barton Springs today swimming with Chris. Yeah, me, Mike, and Chris, yeah.
That's really quite lovely image.
Isn't
there.
That wonderful? Yeah, it's not a great image. Like, we still look like musicians at the pool. Or you can kind of tell.
Everybody's very pale.
Yeah. We can tell we're not the athletes, but we're.
Well, you can't tan. You're very, very fair.
No,
right?
I can't tan
at all. Yeah. Neither can I. Yeah. No, the son does not agree with I've heard somebody say an Irish person at the beach is like a fork in the microwave.
Yeah, exactly. I just get like freckles and they just kind of connect after a while.
Yeah. Like one big freckle.
Yeah.
Sure. So you're there, Chris and Chris Layton and Mike Flanagan and you bring in your bass player from the early days, John Penner. Huh?
John Penner, yeah, from the early days.
Nice.
Yeah,
nice.
My very first bass player, the guy that came down to Austin from Canada, and then now he's back in my band.
Right on.
Crazy, right?
Hey, do you know, he lives in Austin, who's that guitar player that was filling in for Billy Zoom that was on our show, Renee? What's his name?
Geez, I'm drawing a blank.
He's in all those horror flicks.
Yeah,
music.
Oh, geez, I can't believe I'm blanking on this... Because I
can't remember his name.
His book just came out. He's from Beaumont. Help us.
He was playing with X for a while. He was filling in for Billy Zoom.
He
was filling in for Billy Zoom.
I'm going to have to cut all this out because I sound like too much of an idiot to can't come up with his name.
Sorry.
I'll think of it later on. But yes, I'm sure Sue does know him. But anyway,
Sue, are you still playing with your Canadian mates, or they've all gone their different ways?
Well, we've all gone our different ways, except the bass player John, who came back to my band. So
okay.
John Penner, yeah, who we were just talking about.
Right.
And are you getting ready to promote this new record? You're going to go on tour?
Yeah, we're going on tour in a couple weeks.
Man, I was looking at y'all's schedule and you guys are hitting it hard. You got first of all, you have a couple of Jesse Dayton is the fella's name, man.
Jesse Dayton.
Sorry, Jesse. It's I was picturing your face the whole time. Just, you know, I'm very distracted. I got about 10 things going on right here at one time. But So, looking at your schedule, so you have the record release party, you have the Antone's record release in Austin on October 15th,
mm-hmm.
and then you have the Houston record release at Rockefeller's on the 22nd.
Yep.
And then you have a couple of more Texas dates. I think you play Dallas maybe the next day or something.
Yeah.
Then you guys quick run through the Midwest and then you're up into the Northeast and all of latter half of October, all of November, December. You guys are out there hitting it hard like the old days.
Yeah, let's hope so. We're just praying everything holds at this point. It's I'm just happy to have things booked.
Yes.
And then I'm like, okay, I hope they work.
Right. No, I'm looking at your schedule. I'm going, I mean, that looks like hard work, but it looks like good work. You know, it's like, it looks delicious. I could picture myself out there.
Well, yeah.
Doing a whole string of one-nighters like that.
You guys should be out there.
Yeah, well, we will be. I'll be out there and the Iguanas will be out there. So you have these three videos out now. You guys have been kind of dripping the singles out one by one. They're getting great response and getting all these terrific write-ups. I was telling you, this is going to be a big record for you, Sue. I'm so excited for you. You know, yeah, everybody can feel it. You know, you have a good team, assembled.
Well, thank you.
After 30 years, it's going to be, what do they say? 30 years to be an overnight sensation.
Right. I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. I'm just, you know, we just keep going. I don't know what's going on, but let's hope it just keeps going. That's all. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Everybody get vaccinated and, take your vitamins.
Take your vitamins.
We can do this.
Yeah.
Let's see. So, you know, I was looking, speaking of Patreon, I saw that you have a Patreon page, and everybody should check that out. There's plenty of exciting things on the Sue Foley Patreon page. But one of them, I saw the mid-tier gives you access to the Sue Foley podcast. Now, what pray tell goes on the Sue Foley podcast?
Oh, well, you know, this is, I call it Sue Foley's occasional podcast because it's quite occasional. And I have, I started interviewing women guitar players in 2001. So they're all done on cassette. So I started to digitize those interviews, but I've been putting them together in a book for this long. It's 20 years now, believe it or not. And, it's taken me, I did over 100 interviews up until about 2010, and then I just kind of sat on them, and then I did a couple of drafts of the book, and I think I'm on my third draft right now. Okay, I'm honing in on it.
Nice.
But I did start to take those interviews, and I digitized them, and I've been releasing them as part of this, you know, just for people who do wanted to support that project as something that could kind of get some insight.
So who are the big names that you interviewed?
Well, I interviewed a lot of big names, a lot of more obscure names, but people, you know, I did interview Bonnie Raitt and Susie Quattro and Jennifer Button. And
cool.
I haven't done, like, I really haven't done any interviews since 2010. So I really am not up on all the recent young guitar players. And there's a lot of them, but I'm more stuck to people who I was more influenced by and that were around when I was coming up. Charo.
Right.
Charo was my last interview, and I did that last year. That was awesome. I love Charo.
Charo, really?
She's alive?
Yeah, she's thriving. She's fantastic.
Wow.
How old is she? She must
You'll
be
never
like
know. Her. You'll never know.
She still looks the same.
I could Google it and find out.
She actually went in and changed her birth certificate at some point. So nobody knows exactly how old Charo is. But she looks great, and she still plays guitar. And she's a great guitar player. But yeah, so people like that.
And she's in Austin?
No. Charo is, I did it by Zoom, but she's in, I think she lives in L.A.
Okay.
Yeah, she's fantastic. You look her up on Instagram. She's crazy, but she's wild. But anyway, yeah, I did a lot of interviews. So I just, my Patreon, I do a whole bunch of things. I kind of just throw a bunch of content out there, and then I sometimes put out those interviews.
Nice. Well, you know, Sue, for those playing Troubled Men Podcast Bingo at home, this is the first time that Charo has ever showed up on the podcast. So congratulations.
Really?
Yes.
Wow.
Believe it or not. And, you know, I'm a huge fan. So is Manny of, like, you know, the 70s Dean Martin show.
Yeah.
And, you know, all these shows that Charo was a regular on, you know, Love Boat, you know, but she's not really in part of the zeitgeist, but I love it when we can reintroduce these classic figures.
Isn't it wild? Because I, you know, when I was doing my research to interview her, I was going back and watching all those things, and I realized, you know, Charo was probably the first woman I saw play guitar, because you know, she'd come out and do the comedian thing and the coochie coochie and make everybody laugh, but then she'd play guitar, and she had this artistry to her, you know, this artistic, serious side, because she was quite a serious guitar player, flamenco and classical. So I think she was the first woman I saw play. And I, you know, I grew up with all these men playing and all these guitar heroes who were all men, but you didn't see women. So that's why I got into that project, because I was sort of enamored with, you know, just the whole idea that, well, when I was coming up, there wasn't that many, and now there's a lot.
Right. Well, that's exciting, man. I'd definitely read that book.
Oh,
you know,
thank
that's
you.
Man, that's, no, I look forward to that. That's Troubled Nation. We have something to look forward to, you know, after we fully see the supernova that Pinky's Blues is about to become.
Oh, you're too kind. Thank you, Renee. That's very nice of you.
Well, Sue, it's such a pleasure to have you on, you know.
Wait.
Yes, yeah.
When are you going to come to New Orleans?
Well, we're going to come down there one of these days, for sure.
Okay.
Maybe February. Okay. We're supposed to ride through there on their way to Florida, and I've been telling my agent, you know, get us something.
Yeah, for sure. You know, well, I know anytime you guys are through town, if the Iguanas are playing, you always stop in and tell us hello and sit in with us. It's always such a
pleasure to have. And, you know, we go way back because when I first met the Iguanas, I don't think you were in the band yet.
Right.
Or were you? I mean, that was back in when I was still with Mark Hummel. So I wasn't even 21 and I met Joe and Rod. I mean, you guys were.
Right. No, you knew when I got in the band, they already knew you and they would mention you and told me who you were. And so, yes, you knew the Iguanas before I knew them.
Yes. And we met them. We had come to New Orleans and we were with Mark Hummel. You know, we're kids. Our first time in New Orleans. And I don't even know how Mark knew you guys or if we just happened to meet you guys. Joe was bartending.
Uh-huh. The Palm Court or
something? Yeah. Down there, right? But we were just hanging out in town. We had some time off, and we ended up just hanging out in New Orleans, man. And we just had a blast, you know, and got friends with, you know, made friends with all you guys, and it was great. So, yeah, we go way back.
Yep.
I love the Iguanas. I'm so happy you guys are still together, and it's like just such a comfort.
Yeah, you know, I always say there's not enough time on the timeline for us to develop the kind of connections and relationships and telepathy that we have with each other with anybody else. We don't have a choice but to stay together. You know, this is my one shot at this kind of. This kind of dynamic in a band.
Yeah, it's really special. It's really special. So
yes, and it's a bunch of guys that you could do it with. You know, it's not everybody you could stay together with that long.
Oh, for sure. Is a group I can, it's so rare. So absolutely, we love seeing you guys. So.
Well, we can't wait to see y'all back down here, Sue, and God, be safe out there on the road. I have such great expectations, and I know it's going to be a great tour, a great year for you.
Well, thanks so much. Thanks for having me. It's really fun.
All right. Well, Sue, as always, in the Troubled Nation, we'd like to say trouble never ends,
but the struggle continues. Good night.
They never saw us coming. They didn't know of our plan.
We snuck right up from behind and stole it right from their hand.
They couldn't see us for looking.
That was their first mistake.
Nothing more did it take. We are the lucky ones. We're the fortunate sons. We've only just begun. We're the lucky ones. Well, I was hiding up in Canada.
Nobody's seen you for a time.
Yeah, I heard you were tearing it up in Austin.
That's right. And I was doing pretty fine.
Here we are still standing
after work.